If you're looking to save some money on your wireless plan, take a look at Visible Wireless. They're a transparent wireless carrier with nothing to hide. If you haven't heard of Visible, well, now you have. They're the wireless carrier that's making wireless visible. It's in the name. Switch to Visible, where you can get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon for just $25 a month, taxes and fees included. One line wireless, just $25 a month with taxes and fees included. That's unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. Switch now at Visible.com. You shouldn't judge a book by its cover, but you can judge a company by its name. Like Visible, the wireless company making wireless visible.
Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
Hey there. Ever wonder what happens to all those amazing screenplays that never make it to the big screen? Wonder no more. Welcome to Table Read Podcast, where we bring those undiscovered gems to life. Picture this, talented actors giving incredible performances with the occasional laugh or blooper thrown in, produced by award-winning pros. From drama to comedy, TV pilots to feature films, there's something for everyone. And guess what? We release new episodes every week, so don't forget to hit that subscribe button. Table Read Podcast, where great stories finally get their chance to shine.
Coming up on Unlocked, episode 388, it's IGN's weekly Xbox podcast. Borderlands 3 finally, for the love of God, has been announced. We'll talk about it and what they showed and what is left to be revealed. Plus, another Borderlands game that's maybe a little unexpected. We'll see about that. A totally new game called Darkborn. That should be interesting. We've got plenty to discuss there. Ubisoft confirming they will be at E3 and more. What's happening, friends? Ryan McCaffrey with you for, let's see, April 2nd, 2019, Podcast Unlocked. That's right, we can go back to calling it Podcast Unlocked now, because it actually is a podcast again.
A real podcast.
Miranda Sanchez, good morning.
Hello, good morning.
You're still rocking. Studio or not, you got your Gears of War mug.
Yes, I will always bring it with me. It is my favorite mug. It's an excellent mug in its shape and its weight.
It's a good mug.
Of course, it's designed super well.
So, yes, you know. It's designed for a gear to hold with a big, you know, glove and gauntlet.
Yeah, my hand's not that big, but I held it with two hands, so it's okay.
Destin Legarry, good morning, my friend.
Bam, that coffee smells good, Miranda. And I get my morning cup. I usually do an iced coffee in the morning. Then when I get to the office, I have a warm cup of Joe.
Look at you. You got a whole ritual.
I love my coffee. I love my coffee. It's wake up in the morning, go to the gym, come to the office, fail at capturing Mortal Kombat fatalities for about an hour, get super aggro on anybody who talks to me. Duggan knows.
James Duggan, hi. Hello. Welcome. Hi.
I don't seem to be as awake as everybody else, and I think it's because I recently switched off of coffee to just tea.
But
that's okay. I'm here at heart.
I've never drank coffee. Just never been a thing.
Yeah. What's your morning ritual?
I wake up, I walk the dog, shower, then pack up my lunch and breakfast and come eat. And I eat breakfast here.
Some Winnie the Pooh squats in the mirror. I do those.
Yeah, I'm a push-up guy. It doesn't show, but
you guys do exercise in the morning, like at your house?
No, I usually end up doing it after work.
Yeah, oh, okay.
I work out at lunch.
I mean, ooh. I do. Yeah, I live on a hill, so the morning dog walk, like
that's a good one.
We do go up and down the hill on purpose to just get the legs working a little bit. Yeah. But you know. It's all just surviving at this point.
Yeah.
It's not even trying to look good. I know for Duggan it is. He looks good.
So at some point, a personal trainer becomes a survival trainer. It's just about maintaining the slow deterioration until the infinite abyss.
Pretty much. Right. I mean, you know, that's a kind of a.
I mean, it's important.
Fair way to look.
I also feel like anytime you exercise, it enhances the rest of your life.
That's true.
It makes you feel good.
That is true.
The rush of endorphins, and you feel like you've accomplished something that wasn't just given to you.
I turn 37 on Friday, so I am one step closer to that abyss.
Happy birthday!
Yeah.
Well, happy
Thank
early
you,
birthday.
Man. Yeah, thanks.
Hey, you're trailing behind me, but not by too far.
I'm old.
I forgot we're both April people.
Yeah.
Mine's on the 15th. Tax
day. Aries! Oh, man. All right. I wanted to start, actually, One reason James Duggan is here, besides the fact that he's handsome and we like hearing from him. But yeah, we haven't had a chance really to – that's true. We have not had a chance to really dig into the Division II, especially in light of – there's a lot of things. There's a lot of – there's big picture stuff and there's micro picture stuff. James Duggan, you reviewed the game. You've spent a ton of time with it. You've effectively done everything there is to do at this stage.
Yes.
And
For now.
But number one, I wanted to just talk about this because this is a video game that has largely avoided the launch problems of its genre compadres.
Yeah, I think actually that's kind of the thesis of my review in some ways. I feel like it did a phenomenal job, and I feel like that's an achievement that is not to be taken lightly. It launched, the servers were stable, and the content was there. And I really, when I come into shared world shooters or I come in MMOs, there are far fewer of the latter these days, but I look for a couple of key things. And the first one is an incentive to play with other people. I really want to feel like there's a reason that I need to be online. And not just, there are some cheaty ways to do it, like Diablo 3 getting a loot drop bonus anytime that you queue up with somebody else, which to me doesn't really hit as much as something like a World of Warcraft dungeon, where I need a tank, a healer, and three DPS to be able to complete this thing. And the Division 2 does a good job of that, but it also does a good job of introducing new mechanics to you and really kind of identifying all the problems with the first game and fixing and then improving upon those. So getting them to a baseline and then moving past it. One example is the world. New York City was beautiful. Washington, D.C. is beautiful. But I can really kind of take a trip through Washington, D.C. in my mind because I was so engaged with that world moving through the game. They populate it with chests. They're everywhere. There's always a reason to explore. There are Easter eggs and things of that nature. But for the folks who just care about loot, there's a ton of that everywhere. They're so incredibly generous with their loot distribution. They do a good job of introducing new enemies and new factions to you as you progress through the game. That kind of stagnates a bit at some point. But you get to the end game or the story, and you find out that there's a lot more for you to do. There's not an infinite end game in the sense that they have a really good replayable loop in there. One of my criticisms of the game was the daily and weekly quests, which Destiny does a good job of being like, hey, this is the only way you can progress from here on out for a little while.
Mm-hmm.
Which I don't know how I feel about.
Which long-term has gotten actually a little bit boring.
Yeah, but at least it's something. There is a brick wall in the Division eventually, and it's kind of after what they call the end game. But I was just a little bit sour when I got done with that. Going into the Dark Zone is not very well incentivized. That was kind of the biggest disappointment of the game. But coming out of that, I looked at how much I played, and I had 60 really good hours of time spent in the Division. That I had a lot of fun playing with friends. The AI did a wonderful job of really making you work as a team to make sure they don't flank you, and there are certain archetypes that need to die pretty immediately and things of that nature. Boss encounters are a little bit underwhelming, but for the most part, it is far and away the best launch date MMO. I mean, maybe, sure.
MMO.
I feel closer to it.
The best launch state shared world shooter, and maybe MMO. It's content complete. It's there. It's a finished product, and you can play it, and there's a lot of fun things to do right now. And we have Tidal Basin coming up later this week.
Friday.
Yeah.
Oh, mm-hmm.
So for Unlock listeners out there who have maybe either been burned by playing
Anthem?
Destiny or Anthem at launch, this is the one that avoids a lot of those mistakes, it sounds like.
Sure. To me, it's less of avoiding mistakes and really building upon what has been the genre's weakest, the biggest failing. The thing about the Division 2 is there is an aha moment with Anthem's combat. There's an aha moment with Destiny's combat where it just feels really good. There's this visceral, this feels really good in the moment.
Yeah.
The Division 2 doesn't really have that. The combat is a little bit more strategic and is a slower burn, but it does get there in terms of the loot, in terms of the interesting modifiers that the equipment have. You eventually get to a place where you really care about what gun you have, what talents and attributes it has. There are a ton of Easter eggs. The world is really well built. So in spite of the combat not being remarkably gratifying, it's certainly better than the Division 1. It's still kind of basic cover-based shooter at some point, but it gets there with all of the loot and all of the various variants that they mix in along the way.
So tell me if I'm interpreting you correctly, because I haven't played the Division 2 beyond a one-hour session at E3 last year. Would it be fair to say that the highs maybe aren't quite as high as Anthem or the best of Destiny, but the lows are clearly not as low? Is it just steadier, just smoother, you know, rock solid
it's
kind
a steadier
of situation?
85%.
Yeah.
Good way to put it. Yeah.
Yeah. Do you think that's maybe because the setting of The Division isn't something kind of fantastical? Like, it's very grounded, familiar. Like, you're not going to be surprised by a big monster around the corner. Like, it's just more bad guys. And you've fought not necessarily those bad guys before, but in very similar settings. Like, there's not something surprising. I think that's actually what's turned me off from it. It's like, do I really just want to go trounce around ruin in D.C. and just shoot some guys for a long time? Like, when
you're,
when you
you're
get
improving
into these,
it.
Huh?
You're improving.
Miranda's point.
Yeah,
Miranda's
I know point. What you're saying. Sorry.
It's incredibly valid. You can even see, I feel like you can kind of, sometimes when you play games, you can see past a little opaque pane of glass into the development studio.
Right.
A couple of times. There's this Easter egg somewhere where there are just a bunch of ducks, like in like an unholy communion around a circle, sacrificing another duck. And somebody wrote on the wall, productivity with duck in there. So clearly some developer was maybe later than they should be there. But but also I feel like that there's a totally evident debate internally with that idea. Mm-hmm. You know, should all the enemies be humans? Should all the enemies be grounded in reality? And I do think that it contrasts incredibly poorly against the idea of a stat-driven looter shooter where you want to be excited about the gear that you pick up. You don't want your 40th AK-47 to be the same as your first. And it does a better job than the first game, but you're right. It there are a couple of times where it throws a surprise or two at you, but they are few and far between and sometimes very unceremonious. And you're like, why didn't they save this for a boss fight? Or why didn't they just go off the rails? Metal Gear Solid. Like, it feels like they need to make a decision one way or another, and they're really stuck in this middle ground of creatively not choosing to break the veil of reality in spite of the fact that nanites are healing you.
Yeah.
And there are robots running all over the place.
Yeah, and I'm not trying to say that, like, human enemies aren't interesting. Like, I think there are definitely ways to do it.
Just the repetition.
The question, like, yeah, how do they keep that lively in this sort of setting? Because I think there's only so much you can do with humans in, like, a looter shooter. Like, we're encountering these enemies constantly, and how do you keep that engaging over the time?
Another huge criticism is that every boss in the game, they're called named enemies, and they just have a neon yellow health bar, is just a steroided-up version of another archetype.
Like, bang.
Oh, no, it's Jeff!
Yeah.
Look out, it's Zach!
Yes.
Those are literal boss names.
Exactly.
Fad.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's a big part of it. There are a couple enemies that you don't expect. Like, there's a big guy with covered in Kevlar with a chainsaw. There's
Mark.
A suicide bomber, Mark. That crazy dude. There's Joe, who's got a big sledgehammer. He's trying to bash your brains in. So, like, there are a couple of folks who that. But the problem is they are very finite. And I would have liked – that would have been fine if they had some really, really, really spectacular boss encounters. Somebody on Twitter reached out to me and said, you say all this stuff, but can you even think of any? And I'm like, okay. Let me think for a second.
Sure.
Maybe a boss that summons a bunch of drones that slowly work their way to him. And if they get to them, they heal him fully. So your team has to kill the drones along the way. There could be kind of an elite team you go against that's got a sniper in the back with a laser. And you need to – the laser's trained on your forehead, so you need to line it up with an enemy in the middle of it. I think there's some kind of classic game design fun bespoke boss mechanics they could have worked into this thing to make it a little bit less repetitious in that sense. And I think that's a very valid point, Miranda.
But nevertheless, it's rock solid start to finish,
yes,
from what you're saying.
100%.
Yeah, and that's great to hear that, if you've been maybe either burned by the other looter shooters or you've sat on the sidelines because you see how tough that they've had it in the launch window, that this is the one to hop, find your friends and hop in there, it sounds like.
Totally.
I've been being power leveled by our buddy Illegal Knot, our compadre who's in the IGN clan with us, and I played a whole bunch this last week. to get to level 28. I want to be ready for World Tier 5 on Friday. I'm going to be playing a bunch more tonight. It's not fun to be power level because he's World Tier 4, like geared out.
You can't kill anything.
And I literally get like two kills and I turn around and everything else is dead. And I'm like, oh, so this is what that feels like.
I love that though. You know, the fact that you can do that, the fact that it scales and you can jump in with any of your friends.
He wants to get me ready so I can play with you
guys. That's wonderful. Yeah. And there's text chat. Which is something that Anthem has launched without, that Destiny 2 has launched without, that blows my mind because that's a fundamental part of communication of an MMO, of a shared world shooter. There's really good clan functionality. You can tell the folks at Ubisoft and the folks at Massive especially are MMO fans and have put in their due diligence with the genre. It really shows. So yeah, worth checking out if this is your kind of thing.
That's great. Love hearing that. Before we move on to the news, I just want to give a quick teaser for so Unlocked for April will be, or Unfiltered for April will be dropping next week. And I will only say it was a really good episode. It is the most powerful guest, the most powerful industry figure that I've ever had in here. So talk more about that next week. But
how much can he bench? Jeez.
You got Arnold in here.
Wow.
Maybe not that definition of power. Yeah. Although maybe, maybe under the
facade.
Yeah, you never know. There could be like a Vaughn from Borderlands kind of thing. Who knows? But all right, speaking of Borderlands, we'll talk about that right after this. Wait for that achievement sound to pop before we start talking. There we go. Borderlands 3 finally announced after so long.
Ooh, it was a so interesting announcement as well.
Yeah, Miranda, what do you mean by that for people that may not have been watching the midday live stream from PAX East?
If you haven't seen it, definitely check it out. Maybe find a highlight reel.
Should they?
Yes. Because it's like sometimes...
Wait, I have a magic trick for you.
Yeah. So yeah, highlight reel or at least skip through it. Yeah, there's a lot of magic ahead of time for very selfish reasons, I'm assuming.
Yeah.
Not really relevant to Borderlands.
You're referring, of course, to Gearbox's magician by night, game developer by day, Randy Pitchford, who gave the keynote address, the opening address for PAX East. And eventually got around to a Borderlands 3 announcement.
Yeah, so I actually didn't have it on until I just heard people groaning. I was like, what is happening? And they're like, Miranda, this Borderlands, this Gearbox panel is just—it's just going off the rails. It's like, all right, I got to see this trash fire. So they did their magic trip. Randy got done, and they tried to start showing their videos for Borderlands announcements, and they couldn't get their videos working, which is like, thing is like, okay, what are you doing? But then the second part is just like, oh no, like the team's obviously there and they're really excited to show their stuff, and it's not going super hot. And then eventually they kind of get it going. They string along until they get there.
All the video producers in the office are like, why are you playing back 4K files in Windows Movie Maker? You know, like on your production machine. What are you doing? No.
Yeah. So and, it's just like maybe a little less time on the magic, more time on the rehearsing the videos, just in case.
Maybe a little less time on Randy Pitchford.
Maybe, yeah.
I don't understand why. I can't imagine it's anything but frustrating for the people laboring and toiling at that company to see somebody who's embroiled in controversy.
Yeah, I mean that is fair. I mean
Completely tone deaf.
Yeah, whether you, regardless of what you think or about the situation, I don't know if it's even allegations are quite the right word.
Yeah,
has he actually been accused of anything?
I'm not sure
per se, but yeah, I guess you're totally right. Like maybe bring up the like lead designer, a few of them, maybe the creative lead and art director. Bring up a few people and let the actual development team unveil this thing after how many. I mean, I liken the Borderlands 3 announcement to The Boy Who Cried Wolf because Randy has it's been like, oh yeah, Borderlands 3, and then it's. Every time it's mentioned, you think, oh, here we go. We're finally going to get it really confirmed, officially announced. And then, oh, yeah, no, it's future projects, whatever. And this finally now, it's real. But it's like, okay, well, there's the wolf finally entered the room, finally, but and not after a lot of hand wringing and
magic
and card tricks.
Yeah, but yeah, so they finally got their trailer going. Borderlands 3 is of course shown. As we have noted, lots of characters from the previous games.
Yeah.
So I'm actually not a big Borderlands fan. Like, whenever it was kind of at the height of its popularity, me and my friends were still playing, like, Call of Duty and Halo.
Yeah.
So we're just like, oh, Borderlands is a thing, and then never got around to it.
I worked on the wiki for 2.
Oh, very nice.
So I did all the achievements and stuff. Big Borderlands 2 fan.
Yeah.
So
my thing. Go ahead.
Sorry. I really did, like, Telltale's Borderlands, Tales from Borderlands. Like, that was
very funny.
So that's kind of, like, why I want to get into Borderlands 3. So I am, like, hoping that it's, like, a decent enough entry point. Like, I guess that's what I always hope for whenever a game's taken a very long break and it's like on new systems and like, it's really exciting.
I'm actually exactly like you, where I played Borderlands 1 and it on paper should have been a game that was right up my alley. I love first person shooters. Yeah. I love Diablo. This was basically a cross between those. But I got to like, I don't know, maybe 10 hours in or so, and it just wasn't hooking me for whatever reason. And I'm not saying,
Borderlands 1, right?
Borderlands 1. Mm-hmm. And I'm not blaming the game. I'm just saying, like, it just wasn't quite clicking for me. And so I kind of let it go after that. But then, yeah, Tales from the Borderlands, I think, is sadly, now that Telltale is gone, I actually believe that Tales from the Borderlands is overall that company's finest work. You know, I think The Walking Dead Season 1 is its most memorable.
We're
and
talking
impactful.
About Telltale.
Telltale.
Yes. Okay.
Yeah, I. No game has ever personally affected me more emotionally than the Walking Dead Season 1. It really hit me. That was just such a well done, beautiful game. But yeah, I think start to finish, Tales from the Borderlands it was a good story. It was well written. It was well acted. It was funny. The narrative structure was good. Everything about it, I thought, was just fantastic. And Reese is in there. We know we spotted Reese from Tales from the Borderlands, and there along with Tiny Tina and a lot of familiar faces in the Borderlands 3 unveiling. And in fact, this episode will be unfortunately a little stale pretty quickly because there's more coming tomorrow.
Oh, really?
Yeah, they had said tune in April 3rd.
April 3rd, you're right.
Yeah.
Do we know the names of the class archetypes yet?
No, but I mean, the brick was back, and, you know, there was the mage.
The one that really caught my eye was the one that can turn into a mech, right? Is that one? And then there's a turret on top of her ultimate.
And I just I don't remember.
That a second player can then control
that, and I'm like, brilliant. That's what I want. I want a lot of that. I played Borderlands 1 and 2 quite a bit, and it was always a nice, like Diablo high. I never really went overboard with it because all the character files are stored locally and you can just go into a text editor and do whatever you want. And it's a little bit like Open BattleNet in that sense. And I never really get invested in terms of like, I'm going to sink hundreds of hours into this game because I can never really get past the rationalization point of going online and having somebody that just opened their text editor and made their character.
Right.
I'd like, you know, we live in a modern age of looter shooters and shared world shooters. So I'd like a little bit of server architecture, at the very least, like have some kind of authentication process. That's always been a criticism of mine in Borderlands. I'd like to see that solved in 2019. Will that happen? I don't know. And even if it doesn't, I'm sure it'll still be very fun.
And that's actually exactly where I wanted to go with this conversation is, you know, this is a game, this is a franchise now that has arguably had, at least for the time being, it's had its lunch eaten.
Yes.
By the looter shooter genre. Like, it sort of kicked all that off with Borderlands 1 of like, oh, here's a first-person shooter that you can play with friends that's just all about loot and thousands of millions of guns. And but now Destiny is here. Two Destinies and two Divisions and Anthem and so many other games. And do you guys, do you two, Destin and Duggan, as looter shooter veterans and fans, want this to be a looter shooter versus Miranda and maybe myself, who are maybe more just sort of traditional first-person shooter fans? Do we want it to be a looter shooter or sort of stick to kind of what it's done? I'm kind of curious to hear everybody's take on this.
I think Borderlands 3 could potentially still be relevant because it is a little bit more narrow in scope in the sense of you're only ever going to have 4 players. That's the same as Anthem, but Anthem has this kind of like weird MMO-y feel to it. It's got a lot of problems.
Anthem got loot wrong.
Yeah, they got loot wrong. They got multiplayer wrong.
They got multiplayer wrong, big time.
They want to tell you a single-player story, but also please play with your friends.
Yeah.
And like
yeah.
it works really well in free play, but if you're trying to play through the story, then it doesn't make... Anyway, that's a whole other conversation.
I think Borderlands will still have that same issue.
I don't... Well,
I'm curious.
So where I was going with this is that Destiny, Division, Anthem, when an item drops, it's always... it's only always going to be so powerful. And Borderlands doesn't really give a crap like about balance, about end game raid viability. Oh no, if we give this person this loot, is it going to mess up how we tune this next fight? I think Borderlands plays it fast and loose with that stuff, and therefore you can get some really, really crazy drops like a shotgun that shoots rockets. And
yeah,
and
it's really fun.
Are really dialed up to 11, and therefore I do think it has a niche, and I think it's a pretty big niche.
Yeah, and I think they've already done a good job of like even just showing that in their reveal trailer.
Gun with legs.
The gun with legs. It's actually really cute. It's like, oh, I want to pet it.
Yeah.
But you know, I was like, that's great. Like, that's great that they're really playing into that goofiness, because I think with these looter shooters, like, you want some sort of identity that's really exciting to live in, right? Mm-hmm. Because like, if you're going to just keep being here, and if I want something that's going to entice me to it, like, I'm pretty casual when it comes to those. Like, I will pick one, and it's like if it hooks me, then I'm there. For like, I love Destiny 2's raids. Like, I love them so much.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But I haven't touched that game in forever.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, that's what I come for. I come for the event. And so it's like, what do they have to kind of draw people to this world? And I think they already have like that foundation of Borderlands 1 and 2, people loving that. And I think them playing up in their setting and playing up with their charm and like that very good goofiness is just the right thing to do. And I like how they're like, look at all these guns just dropping from the sky. Yeah. It's like a massive pile. And it was just, it's good. Like, they're already setting that tone. And I think that, at least from what I've seen so far, I'm interested in what they want to offer.
Borderlands is more like, maybe a little bit more like The Division, whereas you can play by yourself and you don't necessarily need to go in with a teammate, but that experience is enhanced if you're able to play with friends. And there's the pre-sequel, there's Borderlands 2, and I think Borderlands 2 is really the best example of what that game can do. It's $5 right now on Steam. Yep. They really, really found a sweet spot
for everything,
by the way. Two.
Not just the game, but all the DLC.
Yeah, for everything.
It's one of those things I was like, I'm not even going to play this, but I will buy it.
Yeah, and it was free on Xbox, so if you play on console, I have Borderlands 1 and 2 just from times it's been available for free on Xbox Live for whatever reason.
Speaking of which, Destin, perfect Destin segue right there, intentional or not. Borderlands 1, well, you mentioned you've got it from it being free. You want to pay for it again?
No.
Well, they're giving you the option, but what I find interesting about this for real is there's Borderlands Game of the Year edition that's also out tomorrow, April 3rd, as we record this. PC, PS4, and of course Xbox One. But it's not just a 4K release. They've made some what they're calling sort of quality of life enhancements. They've effectively gone back and massaged some of the either things that have aged badly or were never good in the first place. So there is a Borderlands 2 style mini map that's been added to it. Been added to the game's the original game's compass, inventory updates that allow players to lock and label weapons as junk, auto pickups of items off the ground, and that final boss battle that people did not like, by and large, has been kind of tweaked, redesigned to be quote more engaging, challenging, and rewarding. Players will also be able to customize their vault hunters with new cosmetic heads. Now, Destin, hooray. I know you've just pointed out to me that on PC, that will be actually that Game of the Year edition will be free
if you own it.
You own it on PC, which is cool. I don't know if they're going to be doing that on the console side. I guess probably not, because Borderlands 1 was never out on Xbox One. But nevertheless, I mean, if you're going to put a game out again, effectively re-release it, it's kind of a cool way to do it, I think. Yeah,
I totally agree. Absolutely. Especially that last part, not the hats. The more engaging, challenging, and rewarding boss fight, because that was the worst part of that game.
Yeah.
Was the, you know.
Yeah, but let's not disregard the hats.
Yeah, the hats are important.
Very important.
Maybe you'll get some hats from the final boss fight now.
That would be like if the BioShock remaster trilogy that they put out, BioShock collection. That would be like if they would have gone back and fixed that crappy boss
fight. God, that would have been wonderful.
From
why not?
BioShock
You're
1.
Here already, right? Yeah. I would love for this to be the new gold standard of of quick and dirty. I guess it's not really quick and dirty if you do this, but remasters or reworks. And yeah, with that said, I do think if you're going to play a Borderlands game in 2019, I think Borderlands 2 is the one for you to play. Mm-hmm. I think even 1 has pacing.
Yeah,
everything is worse about 1 relative to 2. It still tells a charming story, and it was still really cool for its time, but the loot, the characters, the world, it's all dulled down relative to 2.
It's funny how, feel free to please argue with me if you disagree, but it does seem to me, in my many decades at this point of playing games, that game sequels often are better than the originals, whereas movie sequels are usually worse than the originals. And maybe that's just because game technology continues to evolve like all the time, whereas film technology more or less has been the same and consistent for a long time. So
I think you can have a good sequel without having a good story.
And, yeah,
that's true.
With the game, not with the film. Case in point, Diablo 3, you know, like, that story is abysmal, but the game gets there.
Right, and I actually, it's funny you even mentioned that, because I was thinking of Diablo 2 to Diablo 1 when you were talking about Borderlands 2 versus 1.
Oh,
like,
two,
Diablo 1 was one of my favorite games ever at the time, but Diablo 2 effectively eradicated any need or desire I ever had to play Diablo 1 again. That's how that's how legendary, Diablo 2 is a top 10 game of all time.
Oh, I agree.
In my book, and it wipes Diablo 1 from existence.
I even went back to play Diablo 1 just because of the respect I have for that franchise, and it was a slog. It was the world was really cool, and the whole Tristram and the cathedral underneath.
Stay a while and listen.
Heroes. But yeah, and Borderlands 2, I think, does that for Borderlands 1. But if you do want to have that full, hey, I want to play them all before the new one comes out, I guess this is a cool opportunity.
You got that Game of the Year edition out there.
Mm-hmm. A small note on the console release of the game. If you've played Borderlands 2 or the pre-sequel, you will actually get 75 free golden keys.
Okay.
Because the shift system is returning. And so the way the shift system works is basically if they tweet out a key, and check out IGN's wiki, because we have a ton of these keys collected. You can actually just redeem them at any time, and you just get a key. It's not like a limited amount.
Right.
So if you redeem any of these codes, you'll get free loot. So when you hit that end game and you just want to get a bunch of cool stuff, you can just do that, and maybe you'll get a better shotgun that shoots rockets, like Doug had mentioned earlier. Yeah.
Good stuff. Mm-hmm. All right. So we'll be keeping we'll probably have more to say about Borderlands 3 next week.
Yeah. Comes out April 3rd, man. That's awesome. And it's really smart timing. Sorry to interrupt you, Ryan. It's really smart timing. After the terrible press conference, which was a disaster trash fire, I was still really excited.
Really,
I was still really excited for Borderlands 3 and to see the game, because like seeing the trailers and everything got me hyped. I went and downloaded Borderlands 2 that night.
Wow.
Like, I'm going to play through that game again once I'm caught up in Division. I'm all in. And to answer your earlier question, like, oh, do you think Borderlands 3 is going to have an audience? Absolutely. I think people are really, really hyped for this game because it really does fill a specific niche, like Duggan said.
I'm just excited for the cosplay. I love Borderlands cosplay. It's very good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and so far, E3 can and usually changes this, but so far the fall is looking a little light. You know, I feel like we were talking about this in the office, that it kind of seems like we're in this lull now where a lot of the big guns have fired off their rounds, and now everybody's starting to move on to next gen. Mm-hmm. And this fall, it's like, I mean, there's Jedi Fallen Order, Respawn, that's probably the big game of the fall as we sit here now. Gears 5 fired up, and then the last thing I forgot to mention, you got Borderlands Doom mm-hmm. is probably. That's actually probably number one on my own personal
list. Yeah, I can't wait.
Even though Jedi Fallen Order is probably a close second. But then, speaking of just comical unveiling and how maybe not so perfect it went for Gearbox, they managed to leak their own release date. September 13th, because they tweeted it and deleted it, and something about dark internets and dark webs, and there was this, I don't know, a tweet that wasn't supposed to go to be public facing yet. And
surprise, everybody.
Before the scheduled tweet.
Is this your card?
Oh, it says September 13th. Congratulations. So, looks like Borderlands will be going They'll be aiming for the earlier side of the fall. But that should be good. I know. And then Control is August 27th. So that'll kind of kick things off. I'm really looking forward to that.
Mm-hmm.
Remedy, talked about that last week. So right now we're looking at, I mean, not that it's a bad fall at all. It's just it's
quiet.
It's a little quieter. Right. Control, Borderlands, Jedi Fallen Order. And that's kind of, those are kind of the biggies. Inevitably Call of Duty, but
yeah,
it's Infinity Ward's turn.
Who knows?
I have no clue
what they're gonna
try, because I doubt it's gonna be Infinite Warfare 2.
Ghost 2.
No. What happened to Riley, guys? How's he doing?
I wonder how that pup's doing.
Oh man.
I made a bet that he was gonna die. It's not happening.
I think we all thought he was gonna die.
Anytime I see a dog in a game or a movie, it's like, hey, it's gonna die. It's fine. I just accept it.
I got halfway through that campaign and when that game came out,
yeah.
I'd played every single Call of Duty campaign.
Mm-hmm.
So so it's just like, I got to finish this because I got to, you know, I've finished all of these. There was this voice in my head that said, why are you doing this? And eventually I listened to that voice and said, you know what, self, you're 100% right. This game's a trash fire. Stop. There's nothing redeeming about this. Just stop. And I did, and I'm happy to have had those few hours back in my life that I didn't give to Call of Duty Ghosts.
It's a good call.
Oh, my goodness. Anyway. New things, though. Darkborn announced on IGN today. This is...
What up, Brandon? Shut up.
Yeah, Brandon Tyrell hooking this one up for us. Darkborn is an interesting game from David Goldfarb and his Swedish team. A smaller team, like 25 developers, they are making a game that I think maybe I could describe it, although it's unfortunate. Evolve has a, I think, kind of unfair negative connotation to it. But,
well, I don't know if it's unfair, but it does have a negative connotation.
It does, for sure. Let's agree on that. But it seems like a basically narrative campaign version of Evolve, where you're a monster, and you start as a little baby monster.
Uh-huh.
And humans tear your family apart. Your happy, innocent monster family. You get torn apart, and you spend the rest of the game growing and evolving and becoming more powerful and taking out all the humans.
I love it.
Which, yep,
yeah.
Sign me up. There is a 15-minute pre-alpha gameplay video on IGN. I encourage you to go watch it. Check out our site or our YouTube. It sounds really interesting.
It looks really, really cool.
First person.
I like how it sort of twists the genre
yes.
around, and you play the part of the monster, and they seem to be doing it really, really well, the way that you power up and get stronger as you go. Just check out the gameplay, and you'll basically be sold. That's all I needed.
Yeah. The people you're killing, too, aren't just innocent people, it seems like, too. It's not like, and it's also very brutal, so I'm glad that they're positioning this as, like, this is a revenge story, because it seems like maybe these zealots are coming after your family and, like, sacrificing the babies and the adults and, like, these very weird rituals and putting them in fighting pits and, like, really awful things. So there is purpose to it, which is good. I don't really like the design of the monster that much. I think it would have been cool to see it something be a little bit more creative, because it's very humanoid. It has, like, arms and legs. It has a face. I would like to see, like, I don't know.
Longer arms.
More arms.
More of a face.
I don't know. Just like something a little bit different.
So. Six arms so you could pick up six guys at once and rip them all in her.
Oh, that's pretty great.
Yeah, I want to do that.
Counterpoint. I like that it's kind of human. I think that the line between what we consider to be like us and unlike us historically is blurred and often misconstrued. And so anytime the status quo of who is the good guy gets flipped on its head, I'm 100% on board.
Yeah, I feel like we've just seen that story a lot. Like,
well, it's still relevant.
Like,
I mean,
we're still packing
baby cows into little tiny boxes, like pumping them full of medicine and then slaughtering them.
I want a spider monster, though.
Sure. But spiders are creepy.
You have hunt showdown for that.
It's difficult to empathize with something that is not anthropomorphized.
Right.
Well, I think that's also important, too, is like you should be able to empathize with something that doesn't look like you. And I think that's an also important story to tell.
I totally agree with that. That's also very cool.
So, yeah, that's just my one complaint from the reveal. It's like, oh, man, I wish it was like a creepier monster or something.
Sure. Well, it sure as hell creeps me out. and I still want to play it. Oh. Like, I just want to see what his experience is like as a monster and, like, what story they're trying to tell there to see if maybe he's not as innocent or his family isn't as innocent, maybe, yeah, as we think.
Knows.
So going on that journey would be cool.
I did like that one of it looked kind of like maybe a mini boss or actual boss fight when the baby monster has grown up just a little bit and he enters this ring with this you could almost call him like a hero because he's like in this fighting pit with this monster, so you're definitely not a hero because he's flying in the pit. It's rude.
Like a matador.
Yeah, and he had these stats on me. It's like, this is bite-proof, and it has this and this. And it's kind of cool to give you like those objectives of like, hey, this enemy has these things. How are we going to figure out this puzzle to defeat him? And so it's like, I did like that. There's an aspect of that as well.
That's cool.
Yeah, so they've been working on this for 3 years, according to Brandon Tyrell's unveiling article with the interview with Mr. Goldfarb, and there's no release date yet, so this is me completely speculating. I genuinely don't know. I would suspect this is a next-gen title, but that's not to say it won't also come out for Xbox One, but if there's sort of no date on it, and we're sitting here in April of 2019, then that would lead me to reasonably suspect that this is a 2020, you know, maybe later or 2021. But in any case, yeah, we'll be keeping our eyes on this because it's definitely it's different. At the very least, it's something different. And yeah, hopefully it will be something different in a good way.
Yep, it looks interesting for sure.
Next this week, Ubisoft locking in
Splinter Cell.
E3. Thank you, Destin. Yes, that is the correct answer to anything with regard to that company. They have locked in for E3. We've been talking the last two or three shows about E3 because the publishers are all starting to either confirm that they will or won't be at E3 or will or won't be giving a press conference. Ubisoft is in for both. In for E3, in for the press conference.
Nice.
It's going to be on Monday, June 10th at 1 p.m. Pacific. That is pretty much their usual time, I believe. Maybe they were used to be 2 o'clock. I don't know. But they're 1 o'clock Pacific, 4 p.m. Eastern. But what I thought was interesting to discuss here with you guys is that I genuinely don't know what they're going to show.
Just Dance.
Besides that.
Yeah, they will show Just Dance. Good call. Yeah,
I actually kind of liked how they've been showing them the past few years. Like, they're very quick about it. They're like, we're dancing.
Yeah.
And we're off stage.
And we're done, yeah.
Just so you remember.
It's well choreographed.
Yeah, they're fun.
Last year, they had a bear.
That's true. That happened. That was a thing that happened.
But
yeah, I mean, I don't know what they're going to show here because there's no Assassin's Creed this year. And I can't imagine they'll show off next year's Assassin's Creed at this year's E3 because next year's Assassin's Creed has got to be a next-gen launch title. There's no – again, they'll probably be an Xbox One and PS4 version of next year's Assassin's Creed game, but I would bet one to four odds I will buy all of you lunch at In-N-Out if there is not a day one – Assassin's Creed game.
Maybe they'll
for Scarlet.
Maybe they'll finally go to Japan.
That would be cool.
I would really like to see feudal Japan.
That would be very cool. I wish Brandon were here to talk about where he wants to see the franchise go, because for him, Odyssey is his favorite Assassin's Creed game.
Yeah,
and it's gone into a more of an RPG direction.
Mm-hmm.
So it's
actually got me more on board with Assassin's Creed.
I'm with you. Yeah,
we were talking about that narrative dissonance in The Division with what you're doing mechanically versus what you're fighting. And I think Assassin's Creed finally got there. We're like, yeah, we'll just have a mythical beast.
They do whatever they want.
Good.
Assassin's Creed.
And I feel like they should do more of that.
Yeah, Far Cry also kind of went off the deep end. But those Tom Clancy games, reality through and through.
Yes.
Well, and that's – so let's talk about that stuff. Because so what is Ubisoft going to show this year's
Division
E3?
Content, likely.
Okay.
Yeah.
But
that would be an easy one.
I think Skull and Bones has to – it was very, very playable last year. I played it.
You were on a boat.
Didn't love it. I was on a boat. And it felt like it needed a
year?
Maybe. It just felt like it needed a direction.
And they're taking the time to do that.
Yeah.
Whether or not, you know, how the game turns out remains to be seen. But, you know, that was – remember when Sea of Thieves versus Skull and Bones was a thing?
Yeah.
Because they both showed at the same E3.
Oh, yeah.
And Sea of Thieves has now been out over a year and has you know, put some meat on its bones.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Whereas Skull and Bones has been delayed to a pretty kind of indefinite window of, I think, if I remember right, the exact phrasing they said was at least 2019. I think it was the term at least there's was some, put in there.
There's another pirate game out there, too, where you sail around on ships, Doug, and it's a PC title. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, that terrible one that a lot of people thought was good. It's abysmal. Mm-hmm.
Maybe they just want to get even out of the way of that.
Maybe not even confusion. Worthy of bringing up. I can't remember the name of it, though.
Yeah.
Anyway,
hopefully
it's not on Xbox, so.
No, yeah, there you go.
But yeah, I mean, so you're right. Skull and Bones is probably a good candidate to have an E3 check-in with.
Yeah, that archetype of game, World of Tanks-esque, kind of launching it. The first time I played it, it was very similar to World of Tanks, and then playing it again, it was a little bit more open world, and there was like kind of a dynamic system where it populates your instance with other players that you can either choose to fight or befriend, but then also betray in classic pirate fashion. But it still felt devoid of a direction, and it felt like an experience that I would get bored of in a couple of hours. So I'm glad they're taking their time.
Yeah.
With that said, the combat's great. Like the ship-based combat, you have the ramming ship, you have the long-range ship, you have the broadside ship archetype, and I think they can really go off the deep end with those and present some meaningful progression. I just
Off the plank. Yeah, there you go.
Yep.
So you look at Destin, you look at the Clancy stuff, Rainbow Six Siege. Highly doubt we're going to see a Rainbow Six Siege 2 at E3 because Rainbow Six Siege is in year 4. It's more successful than ever.
We don't mess with they're probably not going to mess with it.
Yeah, exactly. So then you have, of course, Splinter Cell, as you kindly mentioned, which always warms my heart every time.
I just want to hear that goggle sound. They'll open with that goggle sound, and then they'll do the reveal.
They have reached the point where, number one, if and when Splinter Cell ever comes back, the reveal has to start that way.
Yeah.
It has to start with that sound.
They need Michael Ironside, right? They need the voice actor.
100%. Yeah. And if they start the one-day theoretical Splinter Cell reveal with that sound, the room will erupt.
Yep.
That it will just be an absolute raucous set of applause. But yeah, I mean, I don't... Now I feel like last year was, if Splinter Cell was going to happen anytime soon, it was going to be last year. Mm-hmm. Now I feel like it's too late, and it would need to be I'd actually want it to be a next gen title at this point.
Oh, okay, yeah.
So which would mean you wouldn't see it at this year's E3 if it even was in development.
I think they show it this year. Well, I mean, it was leaked in the Walmart thing, and every other game that was on that list has been revealed.
Everything. A lot of stuff, but not everything.
Like two things weren't.
Right.
Splinter Cell and something else. I don't remember. But I know Splinter Cell was one of them, and I watched a new Watch Dogs, was one of the others.
But that Walmart leak, too, was still like, that was sort of those games are all. It was just sort of, well, of course. It's like the inevitable, every year there are the E3 leaks where it's people just write, you know, they just put out fake stuff on the internet. Well, of course some of it's going to be right.
So probably something new that we haven't seen before from Ubisoft for sure. I do actually think we'll see Splinter Cell. Beyond Good and Evil 2, they'll announce something going on with that game. They got to be pretty close to shipping that.
That's a good one to bring up because, I think, you know, that was a big fan appreciation moment. Mm-hmm. Everybody was happy to see that. That was two E3s ago now.
Yeah.
So you're right. I think we might be due for a check-in there from Michel Ancel and the team.
I wanted to debate you on the Rainbow Six Siege 2 thing, but pulling up the average concurrent players on Steam, you're right. It's just it's got traction. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's about 70,000 average concurrent players. I assume that's daily, and that has dropped just the tiniest bit, but not enough, I think, to compare it to like when it first launched. It's been astronomical.
They keep supporting it, and it's like one of the top 10 sales games every month almost.
They just put out that really cool April Fool's Day.
Oh, that was so good.
Where it's like everything's all pink, and I think it's like rainbow
unicorns.
Rainbow. Yeah, yeah.
Well, it's the
rainbow, rainbow magic six.
Yeah, it's like it's super cute, and like I mean, I like it a lot.
It's very fun.
But I think it's really cool that they're still playing that community. Mm-hmm. They're still like making sure that group feels supported. And
I think what'll happen with Rainbow Six is, I don't know if it'll be on launch day, but I think there will be a Scarlet version of Rainbow Six Siege that just, you know, probably you'll either get it for free if you already own it or a very minimal increase price, you know, that that they'll, you know, new higher resolution, higher textures. It's already a 60 frame per second game, but you know, just sort of a port up to next gen and all this with all the same. Like they'll probably sell like a. It'll just be like a deluxe game of the year edition.
I do think it's worth bringing up the perspective that while those numbers are super high for a game as a service Ubisoft game, they're still a fraction of things like Dota, League of Legends, Counter-Strike, Global Offensive.
That's fair. So but those games are also, I mean, those are.
But Ubisoft has been establishing this cadence of we are one of these developers. And they are. They're one of those developers who can support a project post-launch for a very long time, even if it has a rough launch a la For Honor.
For Honor, yeah.
So I think. I do think, like, if I was in a Ubisoft board meeting and they're, you know, what can get us there? I would say Rainbow Six Siege 2 is that title. They've said, historically, they're not going to do that, and I respect that, and maybe that's part of the reason why they're becoming such a good game-as-a-service developer, but still worthy of consideration, I think.
You're totally right. I mean, and maybe you're right, in the next gen does offer a good opportunity to make that leap, where you can, maybe you can... enhance the engine, maybe go even crazier with the physics and the destructibility. And you can always do something for those millions of concurrent players and the player base. You can just say, hey, if you're an existing Siege player, you can get Rainbow Six Siege 2 for $20.
Yep. And they've made some mistakes design-wise that they've had trouble undoing. There are a couple of operators that came out during that like zombie thing that they've gone back and said, you know what, we wish we didn't implement these because it fundamentally changed the way people play this game so much. So I think they kind of hit their design ceiling, bounced back off of it, and now they have a really good sense of
what it is
scope-wise, like where they can go creatively.
Yeah.
So a second one, I would play the crap out of it. But I love the first game, and I know it already has a great community. So,
and here's a game I'm going to mention a couple more names. Sticking with Clancy, Destin, what's going on with Ghost Recon? Like, I feel like it's been a while now.
Yeah,
you know, they did. I guess last year was Michael Ironside stuff.
Yeah, so the expansion, there was a Splinter Cell expansion, sort of teasing. Of course, Splinter Cell without actually giving us a Splinter Cell.
Which was very difficult. That was hard.
Punch in the gut.
I played that, and it took... That was not easy, which
Duggan played
is
it, too.
Yeah, it was a grind, dude. I don't particularly enjoy Wildlands, but I like what it tries to do.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, is Ghost Recon due for a new version? And then the other one that I'm gonna see some smiles in this room in 2 seconds. Prince of Persia. Right? That's shouldn't I think Prince of Persia is it's time for that game to come back. Time for that franchise to come back.
Maybe.
No,
hasn't Assassin's Creed functionally got to the same place of
that's what I was
no.
pseudo.
And I would argue
mythology.
No, because Prince of Persia was really more about the platforming.
Mm-hmm.
About the mechanics
that Assassin's Creed is kind of straight away from that.
And less about the combat. Certainly Prince of Persia wasn't – I mean, Sands of Time wasn't really an open world game. It was kind of a linear adventure, but it was just so well done with a good story that, I'd love to see a new take on that.
I think that when the scale is reined into a smaller, more finite place, you have an easier time evoking that amazing sense of level design and stuff like that. And Assassin's Creed has kind of gotten away from that because it is this big –
right.
Large open world RPG.
Yeah.
Exactly. You're making my point for me, too.
Yeah.
Assassins has actually pivoted further away from Prince of Persia.
Yeah.
And it is more of an RPG now. So I think there is room has been opened up in the portfolio for Ubisoft for Prince of Persia to come back.
Yeah, absolutely. And I was going to say that Ubisoft is definitely focused more on big open world games. And it's like, it'd be kind of cool to see them scale back a little bit and just do something a little bit more linear and focused. But
I agree.
So
we've talked a lot about old stuff. I just to reiterate my point about their new IP potential here. For Honor was a new IP when it launched. You know, Prince of Persia existed, but they sort of resurfaced it. I think we're going to see some new stuff from Ubisoft this year.
That's what I'm thinking too.
For like way down the line. Of course, we'll see something for Division. You know, the new raid, or they'll do some sort of little featurette about what's coming to that game now that it's a big success on a platform.
Yep. Mm-hmm. I think they're going to lean into that, and I think that maybe Massive's Avatar will be kind of the culminating factor where you ditch reality and kind of take what you've learned and apply it to a space that can really live for a long time. But they're definitely finding some success, you know, striking at the the gold vein that is shared world shooters and MMO-esque games.
Good stuff. Yeah, one way or the other, at least, it's nice that we really have very little idea what Ubisoft will do at E3, and that'll make for a more fun press conference.
For sure.
All right, and then there's just one last thing here, because we're running long, but following up on our recent Bethesda E3 conversation.
Literally hours after the show recording.
They have since, Pete Hines has since confirmed that they will not be talking about Elder Scrolls 6, which we thought, and they will not be talking about Starfield, which we thought they would. So no Todd Howard. Basically, neither of Todd Howard's direct children will be video game children will be.
We're doomed.
Hey.
They sent out the QuakeCon invite today.
I got it.
And it says the year of Doom.
Yeah.
So it's going to be all about Doom Eternal.
Great.
And I'm fine with that.
Me too. Mm-hmm.
Doom 2016 is so good.
It is.
We were just, Miranda, we were just revamping. We had our first meeting about refreshing our top 25 best Xbox One game features. We renew that twice a year to account for new games coming out. And some awesome new games have come out since we last did it. But we were talking about Doom 2016, and it's like that game is... Actually, it's coming up on 3 years old because it came out in May, as I recall.
Yeah.
So it's just shy of 3 years old.
Yeah.
And I would argue it's still, well, if not the best, it's one of the two or three best first-person shooters of this generation. Mm-hmm. Duggan, you with me on that?
I would agree with that. Certainly,
Titanfall 2, high on that list.
Titanfall 2 is high on that list. I think Doom, I can't wait for Doom Eternal because I do think Doom had, in spots, a little bit of repetition more than I would like,
fair.
Because it was so refined and well done. And watching the NoClip documentary, just like getting on board with the, hey, you're either a metal fan or go away kind of thing.
Yeah.
And I love that. It Doom Guy is my new favorite mechanism to tell stories in games because you just know what's going to happen when he interacts with literally anything. He's going to punch it.
It's your spirit animal.
Yeah. I love it. It's wonderful.
All right, let's move on to the loot box. It's a question from Thomas Hall. His gamer tag is Zane Chaos. Sounds like a supervillain name. I like that. He asks, what game storyline has stayed with you the longest?
Oof.
He points out for him it's Life is Strange, which he gave what I presume is a pretty big spoiler in his email that I don't want to pass on for fear of passing on that spoiler, but... Life is Strange has really stuck with him. Miranda, can I go your way first?
Yeah, so this is a hard one because there's definitely things that have stayed with me. I think there's weirdly like fundamental games that have changed change how I think about video games and playing them and stories. And when I was young, Ocarina of Time was definitely one of those for me. It was the first time I felt like guilt while playing a game. When, you know, like Link messes up and like you have to go save everyone from Ganon and everything goes like to shit, essentially. I felt so bad. I mean, it's not my fault. It's part of the story. But like that was the first time I had felt that. So that was a really big thing for me.
Way to go, Miranda.
I know. It's like, wow, how can I do this? But I think the one that's impacted me most is probably Undertale, which is weird because it's definitely newer. But that's the one I definitely... feel the most of the games that I've played, I think.
James?
It's got to be Warcraft 3 for me.
Really?
Oh, yeah. I think there are so many narrative threads and strands that are spun up during that game. Arthas, his journey with Frostmourne, his journey with the plight of the undead, Thrall, so many interesting stories that are indicative of Blizzard's absolute best. And I think some of the best... story meets gameplay moments in all the video games. Now, unfortunately, all of those threads are overexamined to death in World of Warcraft and beyond. And that where Blizzard at some point, I think, had an air of nuance and mystique and subtlety in the way that it told stories where it didn't have to overexamine or explain. Diablo is a great example. When Diablo 2 starts out, you have no idea what the heck is going on.
Yeah.
And you figure it out as you go, and it's terrifying, and it is... destitute as a result. Diablo 3 in the intro, they tell you,
In the beginning, there was angels and demons, and they fought in the eternal conflict. And then it shines the spotlight through the whole game, and therefore there's no sense of exploration, right. And you're not really afraid of anything. So I think that was the sweet spot for Blizzard was Warcraft 3 with its characters, its fantasy, as well as its nuance.
I like that. Destin?
God of War 2? No, yeah. I'm just kidding. That's a joke. Great. That's not real. Yeah.
Wow.
I would actually say... Eco, Shadow of the Colossus, and The Last Guardian for its passive storytelling and what you sort of discover as you play through each of those games. His relationship with I believe she's a princess in Eco, who he's trying to protect throughout the entirety of the game, and just how that all unfolds. In Shadow of the Colossus, he's selfishly trying to resurrect his girlfriend or wife or whatever. And
significant other.
Yeah, significant other. And to see... what lengths he goes to. He basically destroys everything to bring back one person. Yeah. And then The Last Guardian is about your relationship with this monster, bird dog. And then how all that ends up unfolding. But secondarily, Fumito Ueda and his drive and vision for creation of games like that, he will actually just go into this creative cycle where he'll concept out everything in 3DS Max, and then show his design goals with very rudimentary physics sort of attached to the objects. He's like, this is what I want it to be like when you're scaling a character. And so story-wise, those stick with me, and I think about them often, the games. And I also think about his drive and his vision as a creator and being able to convey that outwardly and retain it throughout the design process to launch something, even if it's flawed in the way that The Last Guardian was.
Yeah.
He left Sony, but he stayed on as an advisor to make sure that the game met at least a specific bar for his vision. And I actually really appreciate The Last Guardian for that.
Awesome. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's tough for me to pick one. I mean, I've been thinking just as you guys have been talking. And Halo hasn't...
Story, though.
But as far as storyline sticking with Halo. Me... No, I mean, I've always loved Halo, and I do appreciate the universe, but it's not quite on that list for me as far as a storyline that's just resonated with me for years after the fact. I actually go to a couple of my old favorite LucasArts adventure games. Full Throttle, number one. If you've never played it, it's sadly still not out on Xbox, but it did get a remaster. You can play it on PC or... I think there was a PlayStation release too, because Sony helped kind of hook all that up for Tim Schafer. But Full Throttle is just this hilarious, just bizarre, dystopian heavy metal biker adventure that alternates between sort of good drama and just absurd humor. And on the same vein, the first three Monkey Island games are all that way, where it's those games were just sort of this bizarre escapism where you're going into this goofy Caribbean sort of paradise, but you're just this bumbling teenager trying to become a pirate. And those storylines are with me. But I guess I would probably actually have to go with the game I mentioned earlier in the show, Walking Dead Season 1 for Telltale. Like that, I still think about that game and that story from time to time whenever anybody mentions, this the emotional impact of this game or that game. And for me, it's like I always come back to that of I've said this story before, but when I finished the last episode and what happens, it was 11:30 at night, and I think we had gotten it before, we got it in for review. I didn't review it, but I think Mitch Dyer was had also finished it. Mm-hmm. And I was just like, and I sat there and went, it's 11:30 at night. It's way too late, but I have to talk to someone about this. So I called Mitch, and thankfully he was still awake. And we just like sort of talked about it I was sitting there with my jaw hung open. Quiet. I mean, there was nobody to talk to in the room, but it's just silence as the credits rolled. And it was just like, man, that game and that story were something else. So Thomas Hall. Great question.
Good question.
For the loot box, if you want a friend, Thomas on Xbox Live, his gamertag again is Zane Chaos, and we'll come right back and two shakes of a lamb's tail with the Unlock Block trivia. I am only hearing that in one ear, so that, I wonder if that's going to come through.
It's all mixed up.
Yeah, true. I can stereoify it before it hits our listeners' ears. Anyway, Joe Haygood from Riverside, California. His gamer tag is McLazy. I like that.
I like that, too.
Yeah, that's good. This is a good one from Joe. He asks, Henry Rollins, over the years, has had a long-spanning career, including successful stints as, of course, a musician, an actor, TV shows, and yes, even a starring role in a video game. So, do you know which one of these games from the original Xbox that Henry Rollins voiced the lead character of? I want to preface this by saying I didn't know this one. I was around in the OG Xbox days covering Xbox, and I don't remember this one. So a great question from Joe. Henry Rollins, did he voice the lead character in Big Mother Truckers? Which is, well, yes, was a real game. Driver, that's Driver 3, D-R-I-V-3-R, which was very much lampooned at the time for its title. Soldier of Fortune 2 Double Helix, or Mace Griffin Bounty Hunter?
I didn't know who Henry Rollins was.
That's so fair. Like, yeah.
I need to look this man up. And it's like, I have no idea.
That's fun. You know, hey.
He has a song called Liar that was on MTV for many years.
I'm going to look that up after the show.
Yeah.
Yeah. Can I guess?
Go ahead.
I have no idea.
Yeah, go for it.
B.
Driver. Driver 3. Sure. James Duggan.
Also unfamiliar, but I'm just going to go with Soldier of Fortune 2 Double Helix.
Destin, you think you know it?
I think it's B.
You think it's Driver 3.
Mm-hmm. I feel the music bringing me luck. The new loot box.
The new old music?
Yeah, new old music.
Unfortunately, no points this week. It was Mace Griffin Bounty.
Dang it, that's what I was going to guess. I was like, no Sorry. Way. That's too edgy.
Good job, Joe. Yeah, Soldier of Fortune 2, Double Helix. Man, that was Raven Software, back when Activision actually allowed them to make their own video games and not just be a Call of Duty support studio.
Mm-hmm.
Soldier of Fortune 1 was super controversial in its day. I'm dating myself, but that's all right.
I thought Mace Griffin was made up.
Me too. No, that's why I didn't know. Like, there's no way.
Soldier of Fortune was a ultra-violent first-person shooter. Its whole thing, back when the technology didn't allow for this,
we're showing
the box art, for Mace Griffin.
It's
But you could shoot off individual limbs and body parts of guys in Soldier of Fortune.
The Mortal Kombat of shooters.
Yeah, they took that to the next level in Soldier of Fortune 2. And then
how did they take it to the next level?
Just, you know,
you can shoot off more parts.
Yeah, I think so. I think that's literally because
fingers.
Again, you have to remember back, like in the earlier first-person shooter days, even the early 3D days, you couldn't, like, there were the models were just model. Like you couldn't.
You could jib people, but that's
it. Yeah, you could explode them into a ball of goo, but that was about it. So Soldier of Fortune was one of the first ones to let you shoot off arms and legs and. You know, guys would be limping around and then fall over, and it was very grisly at the time. Boy. So, excellent job, Joe. If any of you out there want to send in a loot box question and or an Unlocked Block trivia question, you can do so by emailing unlocked@ign.com. In the case of the trivia, I'll need 4 multiple choice answers, and do note the correct answer in your email. It's time for us to go. We're over the hour mark, so that's about all. All we've got time for this week. We got Beyond coming in here next to record their show. They were yelling at us last week because we ran way over. So I'd be a little more respectful to our coworkers this week. But James Duggan.
Yeah.
Where can we find you on Twitter, on wherever? What have you been up to?
You can find me on Twitter at ThuggandDuggan, ThuggandDuggan. And you can check out the Division 2 and Anthem reviews, which are both posted now. I think even if you've... I like to check out other people's reviews after I've posted mine.
Oh, yeah, after the fact.
Just because I like other people's ideas.
Yeah, and see what other people thought of something.
Even if you play the games, give them a watch, see if you agree or disagree with any, and I'm always willing to have a nice debate.
Love it. Destin.
Yeah, check me out over at twitch.tv/TheDestinChannel. Stream there on Tuesdays. I'll be grinding out Division, actually, getting ready for World Tier 5, Klingonaut's going to throw me a bunch of garbage. And then all that'll be thrown away, I'm sure, shortly thereafter. Really excited to be playing some Borderlands 2 again soon. And I have a major feature that I've been working on for a long time that's going to come out soon. But
every Destin video on IGN,
yeah,
ranked
in one in one big compilation. But yeah, I've been really trying to get it done, and it's almost wrapped. So I'm
love
happy.
It, mm. Miranda.
You can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at HavocGrows, and that's Havoc with a K. Right now I'm actually working on a lot of behind-the-scenes stuff, so it's not a lot to show for, but if you guys do see any games that are announced or confirmed to be at E3, or if you guys know some games, or if you're maybe working on a game that will be at E3, hit me up, because I am also managing our E3 games list, and ooh, so we keep track of everything that's been confirmed or has substantial rumors to be at E3. So
fantastic. You can find me on Twitter at DMC_Ryan. I actually just thought of one other thing I did this week for our features editor, Lucy, speaking of Doom that
oh, yeah,
Doug and I are both super looking forward to. So Lucy, our features editor, said, hey, we should do with Rage 2 coming out soonish, we should do a top 10 weapons that id Software has ever done. I was like, oh, I'm brilliant, your guy for that. I'm your guy for that. I've played them all. So, yeah, I put together... You can probably guess what number one is, but you know, see if you agree with the rest of the list. But yeah, id's made so many good shooters over the years, and those shooters have had a lot of really cool weapons in them.
I did the capture time for it, man.
Yes,
it was
you.
It was so fun to go back and play those old games. The original Quake only used keyboard controls, so I'm using the D-pad to aim.
So great.
And it was such a trip.
And you
to
got
go
Trent
back.
Reznor playing.
Right? Nine Inch Nails. Yeah, I was like, whoa, this is pretty cool to go back to and like experience again.
Quake was
it was fun.
It was a revelation in its day, for mm-hmm. sure. All right. And then, yeah, Unfiltered next week. It'll be a good one, I think. Let's keep an eye out or ear out for that one. And we're done. That was Unlock 388. Thanks for tuning in as always, and we'll see you all next week.
Sheridan, New York Times best-selling author of Supernatural Horror. Missing for nearly 6 months now.
That's not possible. Is the compass broken? Or did I turn to the
given the circumstances of her disappearance, someone with a more vivid imagination might decide she'd pierced the veil, so to speak.
Weak radio signal. 700 meters. Closing fast.
There's no place for ghost stories and close encounters in this investigation, or any other.
I need you to find me.
To save yourself.
Of course.
What else would it be?
The Sheridan Tapes, a serialized horror mystery podcast. Stream the complete series today on Realm and on all podcasting platforms.